And the answer to that is, well, I'm not a lawyer. And even if I was, I'm not your lawyer, you know, and so you should hire a lawyer. Like every company should have a lawyer.
So why do you need a lawyer? If you're a packaging designer, if you're a graphic designer, if you're just freelancing as a copywriter, why on earth would you ever need a lawyer? If you've ever received some kind of work contract, an NDA, all these types of things, the truth is you're not a lawyer. You're a designer. And a lot of times the companies will put pressure on you, just sign that. That's just rote. That's just what we do. And as a designer, you're like, well, all right, I read through it. It seems like it's all right. But you're not a lawyer. You don't know the ins and outs of what's written in there. And a lot of times what we're finding is brands are just copy pasting stuff from things that they find online. And then that becomes part of their contract. Some stuff actually voids the entire contract. So I wanted to have John on here to kind of just talk through, like, not just the legal side of creative, because he's a creative that moved into law. He's a lawyer. He built this company called Counsel for Creators, and everybody on the team is a creative and they support creators, which is awesome. They've got a subscription model, which is completely new to law. It's something that you don't really see. It's just a monthly fee, which is awesome. You become a member, you have access to all sorts of cool stuff, but you also like basically just have a legal team behind you. I want to get right to the show. There's a lot of cool stuff in here. We're going to talk about artificial intelligence, some of the lawsuits that are happening, you know, what happens after the fact. Can you actually own a style? Can you copyright a style? There's so much that's happening in design at the moment that this is a really important episode just to listen to and find out, like, do you need a lawyer? You do. You really do. It's just the way that things are. So take a listen. Reach out to John if you're interested. His company, again, is Counsel for Creators. And I just want to take a second here to just thank our sponsors. We've got idpdirect.com, Factory Direct Packaging Manufacturer. They manufacture packaging, retail packaging, product packaging, all sorts of stuff in their own factories that they actually own. Also, specright.com. This is the team that's going to help you manage your entire packaging system. You know, pretty much all the details, all the specs of your packaging that were handed over to you from a design agency or from your in-house design team, all of a sudden you've got colors that aren't matching. You've got processes that don't match across the entire system. Specright's going to help you do that. All right, let's get to the show. Appreciate you being on here. We got Jonathan Tobin. You're on the legal side of things for the creative. So can you give us just a quick rundown on who you are and what you, wait, sorry. Let me do a public service announcement here. This episode does not constitute any legal advice.
Yeah.
Does that even matter when you say that?
I mean, it matters. It matters. And I can kind of explain why a little bit maybe during this interview, because it's good. It's good for people to know like what legal advice actually is. I think a lot of people don't know. Anyway, my name is John Tobin. I have a company called Counsel for Creators. We do, we help creators basically and any creative person build businesses. So before becoming a lawyer, I was actually a designer for a long time. Another one of our attorneys is also a designer. So we have creative backgrounds. And so our kind of goal was, let's make it so that law is actually accessible to creative people. And especially now, I mean, when we started, kind of going on your own was less common, or having your own kind of platform or courses or whatever. That wasn't common. You know, this was a decade ago and, you know, it was starting and it was there and a lot of people were doing it. But now it's, you know, pretty established path, you know, to start your own business. Now, the problem that we see, a lot of creators, a lot of creative people just don't really fully step into the role of business owner. They don't step into the role of, you know, I'm running a business and I need to think about legal structure and how to set everything up or how to treat my creative work as an asset. Things that larger companies do because they've had access to legal counsel, they can tell them, hey, register your copyright. Here's how you license it. Here's how you create new income streams. They know how to do that. But a lot of small creators just don't know how to do that. So, you know, they might fall into the trap of just only providing services or get ripped off or whatever, things that really limit their growth. So what we're trying to do is kind of unlock more growth for people who can kind of know the law.
You graduated from UCLA.
Yeah.
And then you went, you basically just opened this up right out of school. So what did you learn in those early days as a entrepreneur?
Yeah. So, I mean, we started Counsel for Creators, pretty much like a month or two after I got my license. And so, you know, I think one of the things I realized early on is that essentially creators or any entrepreneur had two options, right? It was either go on the internet, use something like LegalZoom, or kind of, you know, browse around on the different websites and try to figure out everything, right? And that was time consuming. And usually people got it wrong. Or hire a traditional law firm, which was hourly, you know, hourly and then could be really expensive. So I think that kind of paradigm made it really hard for people to find, good legal help. So what we tried to do is, you know, we saw this gap in the middle and we're like, let's make it so that we can combine the best of both worlds, like custom legal advice, but then also use technology to make it more affordable and easier to use.
Okay. So then if I go to, Counsel for Creators and, you know, I'm starting a business, you offer a subscription model.
Yeah.
So what can I expect to get?
Yeah, you know, mostly what it is with our membership is we have, you know, we have a team of attorneys. And so when someone joins, really what we wanted to do is make a really easy way for people to start working with an attorney, right? So if you go right now and you call it, say, three, four or five law firms, they're all probably going to say the same thing, which is like, give us a retainer of $3,000 and we'll start answering your questions, right? So that's the traditional model. What we wanted to do is make it really affordable. So right now, as of this recording, it's $95 a month, which means there's really not much of an excuse for someone to at least not engage with a lawyer. And if, you know, if they talk to us and they don't like it, that's fine. Nothing personal. But I really want people to kind of, you know, at least make that informed decision instead of sitting there trying to figure everything out or be confused or whatever, when $95 kind of breaks that, you know?
That's insane. I mean, $95 is nuts. Like, I was not expecting that.
I mean, and that was by design. You know, I think we started with that price because we're like, what's something that, you know, is going to obviously sustain the business, but then also be affordable, right? There's very, you know, I mean, there's very little reason not to do that. And, you know, like I tell a lot of people who contact us, look, if you only have one conversation with us and we can kind of give you a high level picture of where your business is at, the kind of things you might want to think about, that's worth it. Already. I mean, that's the kind of thing, like I said, you might have to put down $3,000 to have that conversation and then be charged $400 or $500 to actually have it. So that wasn't a great paradigm.
No, that's crazy. Cause I know my first experience with, you know, with a legal team was just that Googling and then, you know, Googling for a lawyer in terms of like some contract work. And then you're like, how far do I really want to drive? So you kind of Google lawyers in your area, which you might live in a crappy lawyer area. You know, you just never know where there's a vacuum of talent. And then finding the ones that were close, that had decent ratings and calling. And then, of course, it's like, well, you know, we really recommend you come in for an hour, kind of talk through your your issue and blah, blah, blah. And we charge, you know, $590 for the hour. Yeah. And like, give us your credit card number. We'll pay for, and once you pay for it, then we can book you because you want payment up front. And it's like, well, crap, now I'm at $600. I don't even know if I'm going to get quality service or not. And going down that path. So being able to pay, you know, $100 a month, $95 a month and have access to this is, I mean, it already pays for itself.
Yeah. And we, you know, and it's even beyond legal. I mean, you know, every Friday. So like after I get off speaking with you, you know, we do a member call. So that's, you know, even going beyond just like one-on-one legal help, but we'll have like a group of our members. And these are all creators of different kinds. You know, we have actors, podcasters, designers, authors, all kinds of people. And we all kind of come together and just talk business, talk like, what can we do to build better businesses? Cause that's the whole goal. You know, it's not law in a vacuum, like, you know, check off a box and fill out paperwork. This is like, let's be strategic and figure out like anyone who kind of joins us. Our goal is, well, let's make you a better business. That's also going to benefit us, you know?
That's crazy. So, all right. So then for $95 a month, what am I getting? What do I get access to?
Yeah. So first of all, access to an attorney. So once you join, you have access to our calendars. You can talk to me. You can talk to anyone on our team. You can make phone calls and then, you know, essentially we'll talk over whatever needs to be talked about. We have a member network, like I said. So on there, we have courses, we have videos, we have articles, because there's a lot of, like a lot of background information. You and I don't need to talk about one-on-one. You know, if I can send you an 8-minute video that explains to you, like, here's how trademarks support your brand. You can watch that. And then, of course, if you have questions, give me a call. I can walk you through it, right? And then we also have document review. So that's also like if you, you know, let's say somebody sends you a contract and you're like, hey, I have no idea what I'm agreeing to. I wish I could have a lawyer look it over. Just send it to us. We'll give you some notes, any red flags, whatever. And then you can go on your way or talk with us more about it. So that's really it. You know, and it's kind of those three things, the one-on-one consultations, the document review, and then the member network. Those are kind of the three highlights as far as features go.
And that's all covered under 95. It's not 95 yeah. membership. And then I'm paying additional for these calls.
No, the calls are part of the membership. Now, the way it's kind of structured, though, mm-hmm. is for things that there are things that fall outside the membership. So things like actually registering a trademark, or mm-hmm. if you need to draft a new contract or set up a corporation or something like that, we do flat fees. And, you know, we try to make that affordable. You know, it's still an investment, but we want to make it affordable so that people can, you know, actually access these things that bigger companies just do all the time.
Yeah. Wow, that's insane. So you've grown from, you know, last 10 years, let's say. How many clients do you have to date?
I mean, you know, I would say it's probably somewhere in the thousands. Wow. You know, we've helped a lot of people. And, you know, like I said, some people, it's just, you know, they join us for a month and, hey, I just wanted to kind of get some clarity mm-hmm. on some things I was reading on the internet. And it's like, cool, come back whenever you're ready. And we have people who, you know, have been working with us pretty much since the beginning.
And then is this North America only, or how does that work?
Mostly United States. I think the most effective is going to be in California, because with lawyers, your licenses are state by state. Now, mm-hmm. there are areas of law, and this is, you know, really a cool thing about our practice, like trademarks and copyrights, which are central to any creative, that are national. So I can advise someone on copyright if they live in Georgia or Pennsylvania or Missouri, right? Mm-hmm. There's no kind of border there. And then we do have international clients. You know, so if you're, you know, maybe a company in Belgium, let's just say, mm-hmm. who wants to open your kind of brand or open a shop here. And we have, you know, a lot of that, like we're in LA. So people who are coming internationally, opening businesses, we can help them like in US. Now, if you're asking about like, hey, like I'm opening a shop in Brussels, Belgium, and I need to know what to do, right. or I'm not going to be able to tell you, right? Yeah. What I'll do is, but I can refer you to other attorneys. And that's kind of how, you know, that can also work. So, you know, if there's something we can't do, we try to refer people.
I got a couple of buddies that are in law, whether it's, you know, either lawyers or judges at this point. I always ask this question. Do you use Esquire?
No. No.
I'm like, that is the coolest thing. Why not?
Yeah. I mean, it's, I think to myself, like, so I go back and forth. I'm like, it would be cool. Like, it's actually kind of a cool flex. Like, I could be like, all right, drop the Esquire. I just never got in the habit of it, you know?
Yeah. I just think of Bill and Ted's, right? I mean,
yeah.
How cool is that? Just to be able to drop Esquire in there. But
yeah, I think when I got my license, I'm like, I think I had a moment where I was thinking to myself, do I do it or not? And I think I chose no. It could change, you know, it could change.
Yeah. So far, everybody I've asked says no. They're like,
yeah.
Everybody kind of laughs.
Maybe I can pioneer it, like just kind of bring it back. And, you know, I guarantee you, though, other lawyers are going to be like, look at this guy. Like, you know, they're going to know it's not much of a flex, but maybe I'll do it anyways.
I don't know. Dude, I wish there was like something like that for packaging designers. I throw that on.
I mean, you can make it up. You can make it up. Who's going to stop you?
Right. 100%. So what's like the one area that you really see people needing legal counsel on? If you're in, let's kind of focus in design and packaging mm-hmm. design, graphic design, that area.
Well, it depends on what people are doing. So let's just take, you know, if you have an agency mm-hmm. or you have a product line, right? So, you know, the thing I think people really kind of underinvest in is branding, and specifically on the legal front, trademark, right? Mm-hmm. So you'll have people who will build a brand, come up with nice packaging, great identity, great marketing, you know, everything is exactly in place. But what they miss is to mm-hmm. register their trademark and think about the trademark at the beginning. Right. And so what they try to do is they'll try to tack it on later. Sometimes that works, you know, sometimes they get lucky, but relying on luck isn't a great strategy, because sometimes they don't. I've had to have conversations with people where I'm like, hey, you know, that company name that you came up with and that you really like and that you made packaging for and you made branding for is awesome. I love it, but there's already a company out there with it. Or, you know, for whatever reason, it's mm-hmm. not going to work as a trademark. Like, it's not going to work. And I've had the conversation with people where they've already ordered, you know, like a whole, like thousands of dollars of product. And like, it's on a ship coming, you know, coming to US right now. They're like, what can I do? I'm like, honestly, like nothing. You just have to change the name. And so that's the biggest one, because that's a really hard thing to fix. And so I always tell people, like, you know, and I was actually, you know, writing some content that you'll probably see next week, like on LinkedIn or other socials about, like, if I was starting a business today, what are the things I would think about first? And, you know, again, not just legal, but like I tend to think about branding a lot. But like, you know, in terms of trademark, that's like the number one legal thing I tell people to do. Like if you do nothing else and you do that, that's cool. You know, there's more obviously, but if you do that, I'm going to be like, awesome, you're on the right track.
Let's say I'm working with a client and it's a startup and they've got, they sell computer mice, whatever name they came up with. Before I get started, if I've got your service, then I can really kind of reach out to you and go, these are the names I'm considering, or these are the names that they've provided. Can you do a trademark search?
Yeah. So what I would probably do in a situation like that is, because you're the designer, so essentially you're contracting for them. I mean, if you're in-house, well, maybe a different conversation, but let's say you're an outside agency. Yeah. I'm going to tell you, hey, have them hire a lawyer. It can be me. It can be anybody. I don't really care, but have them hire a lawyer. And then you, as the designer, as the contracted agency, you know, I think in your contract, you're also going to want to say that, by the way, like, you know, do a great job on the packaging, on the marketing, on the branding, on the identity. But you need to make sure that you have the trademark all sorted out.
Got it. All right. So then if I'm designing packaging, or if I'm developing branding for a company, includes naming, if I'm creating the naming, then I wouldn't be responsible for the trademark side of it. I would give them the name that they fall in love with, and then it's up to them to make sure that it's legal.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think if I was working in that field, that's how I would do it. If you were my client, I'd say, okay, so here are the names I came up with for you. There's three choices. Just know that I haven't done any trademark work. I haven't done any kind of search or anything like that. And you might have. I mean, you might have gone on Google. Right. You might have looked around just to be sure. But that's like kind of the tip of the iceberg. And I think telling them that is actually probably a huge value add, because I think a lot of designers don't even think about that. Yeah. And, you know, it'd be wrong. And so then, you know, that company can take it upon themselves to do it or not, you know, but then it's kind of out of your hands and you've already sort of pointed them in the right direction. Now, most companies over a certain size know that, because you can't get to a certain size without thinking about it.
Yeah. So just kind of thinking of like the startups, right? Because everybody today is an entrepreneur. Everybody today is launching something to the point where I think launch as a word is played out.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of freelance designers out there that are working with these companies that are just starting up, I don't see that conversation happening, right? So I think it'd be important. So if I do have this service as a creative, then I could reach out to you and say, these are names I'm thinking about. Do I need to, like, even just to protect myself, not to give legal advice to the client, but say, hey, these are three names. You know, I did just a preliminary search, but you guys need to be responsible for it. So you're not handing over, you know, a terrible name that's already owned by somebody else.
Yeah. I mean, you could, like I said, you can do that quick check. So like if it's a car company and they're like, hey, we're going to go with Honda, and you look on the internet and you find out, hey, there's a car company called Honda. Yeah. Tell them. But then, you know, you kind of add that disclaimer. This isn't like a full trademark search, and you want to do that. And like I said, most companies above a certain level are going to know that. But I think also, like you said, there's a lot of first time entrepreneurs who don't know that. And, you know, and I've seen situations, it's rare, but I've seen situations where that company will get in trouble and later come back and blame the designer and be like, well, why didn't you tell me? And the answer to that is, well, I'm not a lawyer. And even if I was, I'm not your lawyer, you know, and so you should hire a lawyer. Like every company should have a lawyer.
Yeah. I've been in that scenario where, you know, I created something for someone, and then somewhere in some city, they've gotten into an issue, whether it's from a sustainability or new legal, you know, mandates that happened in that particular area that we weren't considering that they were going to have a product in. It's like, well, you're the packaging expert. It's like, I am.
Yeah.
But I can't be responsible for looking at every single municipality in the country.
No.
To deliver that to you.
Yeah. And you're not a lawyer, but I think the way that you can handle that is kind of just what I was describing. Yeah. Be like, look, this is what you should do. This is what, you know, my successful clients do, is they make sure they're in compliance with the law. They have counsel in their jurisdiction who can guide them. And that's literally what lawyers do.
Like what you just said is so simple, but it's so difficult, at least for me. And I would think for many other designers, to say to the client, yeah, I'm not a lawyer and I'm not your lawyer, but dude, that's 100% what the conversation should be. It should just end right there. You know, I'm creating something. I'm not giving you legal advice in terms of like where you can and can't sell this product. Like that's really, that goes beyond my capabilities.
Yeah. And most companies, like I said, if they're sophisticated enough, if they sort of are at a certain level, they know that. Like if you're working for, you know, I'm just going to say Google, right?
Right.
they're never going to say to you, why didn't you give us a trademark search? So like, no, we have our giant law firm in downtown San Francisco. Yeah. Who's going to take care of that? You know?
Yeah. 100%. But I would, you know, again, thinking of just like all the D2C brands that are popping up left and right with amazing design, it's like, you know, they tend to ask the agency, hey, can you, is this name okay? Or, you know, I think for a freelancer to be able to go back and just have that answer, like just have that answer ready to go of, I'm not a lawyer and I'm not your lawyer.
Yeah.
I think it's dope.
Yeah. And the way you provide value is even connecting, you know, so if there's lawyers that you like, and you know, you can just say, hey, here's like three lawyers I know who do this kind of work. So I've saved you the step of looking around. Mm-hmm. These are my recommendations.
Amazing, man. Amazing. You know, just kind of shifting into what I'm seeing a lot of now, right? The artificial intelligence, Midjourney, we're seeing, you know, I'm not sure how familiar you are with this, but
right,
there's a lot of people discussing how this particular software has been trained on different creatives, copywritten artwork or styles. How do you see this thing shaking out?
I mean, it's so hard to predict. You know, it's funny because I think I've written a couple of posts and articles over the last month or two just about this kind of stuff, because I'm really curious to see what happens. So first of all, you know, just for those who don't know, like these models, they train on data. So they'll take in, you know, a billion pictures, and that's where all these images come from. Same thing with text, I think. You know, I haven't looked at exact, like ChatGPT I've been playing around with over the last couple of weeks, like everybody else. I don't know where they get that text from. I'm assuming it's the same thing, like pulling web pages or books or whatever. But, you know, it's hard because in copyright, obviously we start with the principle that, you know, if I create a piece of artwork and you want to use it for something, you need my permission or otherwise it's copyright infringement. That's the simple model, right? Where it gets complicated is once you start transforming it or using it for different purposes. So kind of one take that I put out there, which, you know, is whatever, debatable, is, you know, because these images are being used for a completely different purpose other than just being like straight up art, but they're like, you know, they're training a model. It might not necessarily be copyright infringement, but then, you know, after that, I talked with a few artists, like clients of mine. And, you know, I had one artist who was actually pretty well known. She's a comic artist and she was pointing out like, hey, like I sent her a bunch of my Lenza images. I'm like, what do you think of these? Right. And she said, oh, that looks like this artist. That looks like that artist. That looks, and she could identify like four or five of the artists that it was taken from. So that comes from style, like stylistic choices, which isn't typically going to be protected by copyright. So if I wanted to, you know, paint like Van Gogh, like we say, then, you know, assuming like there, you know, his stuff is in public domain, but assuming it wasn't, like his estate couldn't come after me, or he couldn't come after me and say, hey, you copied my style, right? Not necessarily. Now, if I copied the artwork, then he could say, you know, you copied my work and you owe me something.
If it's an identifiable style, is there any way to own that?
Right. It's really difficult. I seem to recall there's some cases out there where, like, you know, really famous artists have tried to allege that. And I think the success is kind of varied. Because the other thing with copyright is the whole point of copyright is obviously we want to protect our creative works. You know, so if you do something creative, we want to be able to reward you for that. But the other, like that kind of higher principle is also we want, like, it's funny, it's in the Constitution. Like, we want our society to make new stuff, which is why America is so dynamic and other countries are so dynamic who have these protections. But if you give people too much protection, right? So if I could, you know, get a copyright in a style, then that's going to stop a lot of other people who should be able to create in that style to be able to, you know, so if I'm a fan of Wes Anderson films or whatever, and I want to film something kind of like it, we don't want him coming at me and saying, hey, like your story is different, your setting's different, your characters are different, but it looks like my film, shut it down, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that's interesting. Cause I know, I think it was, I got a message from one of the professors over at Art Center, Gerardo Herrera. And he's like, here's a different take on this copyright style conversation. And it was really around the, you can't own a style. And let's say if you were to take a student and lock them in a room for 10 days where they study every Picasso painting possible, and they come out of that room and you ask them to create something in the style of Picasso, and they accomplish that? Like how, you know, how is that different than training a model on different artists and then having it design something inspired by them? He said, I think he said yeah. like where it changes is if you try to pass that off as that particular artist and say, yeah, Picasso actually yeah. did this.
Well, and that gets into a whole other set of issues, but kind of, you know, and I can definitely talk about that because it's really important, that point mm-hmm. that you raised, but I want to go back and make sure, you know, if we're talking about like what you just described, a student kind of being trained on Picasso drawings and you're like, okay, make me a something that looks like a Picasso sketch and they can do it. You know, I think the dividing line comes if they're using, let's just say all they're doing is cobbling together existing elements of the Picasso drawings, sure. right? So I'm going to take like this part from here, copy paste, this part from here, copy paste, or even draw, you know, right. like exactly the same thing, you know, in like Procreate or whatever, just like do the, you know, kind of trace it. That's going to be difficult because, you know, you're still kind of copying. But if, you know, you don't, you know, you have your references, but you create something completely fresh, it's going to be hard. So there is like a huge gray area because in between those two points, yeah. I think that's the world we're living in with AI. I think that, I mean, I haven't really looked super closely. I mean, I want to look more closely at like a lot of images created by AI and the originals and kind of be able to compare before I can comment. And I don't think anyone's really done that yet, like kind of surveyed, at least not, sure. not that I'm aware of. Like, it'd be interesting to see like, okay, here's the initial set of this artist's images and here's the output. How close are we? That would yeah. be an interesting thing to do.
Yeah. Cause I know like, I did some packaging for Vans, not working with them, just in general, just playing around and putting it on my packaging mm-hmm. AI page. And I asked it to design packaging for Vans in the style of Shepherd Fairey.
Oh, right? Cool.
And posted those up there. Didn't give any context, just the images. Everybody came back and they're like, oh, that's Shepherd Fairey. Right. Mm-hmm. There was nothing in there that yeah. had actually been created in the past where they're like, oh, this is this. It was just that style was so identifiable. Yeah. I like using him as an yeah. example, because if you go back in, you know, into his archives of art, he was basically copying, pasting, you know, images of different art and then just putting yeah. a different logo on it. You know, so he's done that physically and now mm-hmm. it's happening digitally.
Well, and there's a whole world of art appropriation art where mm-hmm. that's what it's all about. And I think he himself, I don't know, I think it's Soviet realist, like his, yeah. you know, a lot of his stuff is from that art movement. So his style, it's original. He's taken it to the next level, which might be, you know, what we want to be thinking about. He took it to the next level. I mean, he took it somewhere where, you know, someone making a propaganda poster in 1950 would be like mind blown. Yeah. But you can still see, like, if you know the art enough, you know where that all those ideas came from. Yeah, I mean, I think AI is kind of the same thing. It's like taking that and accelerating it, you know, like, and yeah. making it more granular. So instead of like copying a whole movement, like I'm going to make something that looks like geometric abstraction or Soviet realism or, yeah. you know, whatever, I'm going to mimic this particular artist, which kind of gets weird. And, you know, one of the things that I've pointed out to people, to artists who are worried about this, that's where you want to start building your brand and leveraging your brand as an artist. Shepherd Fairey has done that. Like Shepherd Fairey has mm-hmm. done that really well. So much so that when you create a secondary image, like you're talking about,
right.
people know his style. But they're not, you couldn't charge a premium for it. Like he could, like if he makes a skate deck with, right. you know, with that same artwork that you make, let's just say he takes now your AI art and he puts it on a skate deck and claims it's his, he can charge like $600 for it just out the door. You couldn't, you know, I mean, maybe you could, yeah. I don't know, but you know.
All right. I mean, you know, hypotheticals when it comes to legal is always fun. So
yeah.
let's say I create some Shepherd Fairey inspired artwork and I use it for a client, right? And he can't come and claim it. If he was to take that and copy it because it is his style, then would I be able to sue him for copyright infringement if he's taking
yeah.
art that I created?
Yeah. Yeah. So if you created something completely new and he copies mm-hmm. it, then it's infringement. I mean, he, again, just because he has that style doesn't mean that now he can, you know, sort of take ownership of everything else.
Wow. No, that's crazy, man.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's goofy, but it's nuts.
Well, it's interesting because it also points to an issue. Like one thing that I'll often, you know, hear from artists, they'll be worried about like copying a style, right? Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things, kind of going back to the overall point about legal, is people are afraid that if I know about law, it's going to restrict me, right? Mm-hmm. But I often see that people are operating under assumptions that are more restrictive than the actual law itself. You know, so there might be people who are like, well, I don't want to copy his style too much, so I'm mm-hmm. going to chill and not do that. You totally can. Just don't copy his actual artwork.
Right. And I'd say, like, the concern, and this is, you know, I feel silly for saying this, but this is kind of like a thought in the back of my mind is, all right, so I'm, you know, I've had a bunch of episodes here on AI. I do a class on Fridays on LinkedIn, kind of just showing like how to use mm-hmm. AI and, you know, how to use cool. Midjourney specifically to design packaging.
Nice.
And sometimes people say, hey, can you create it in this style or that style? And I'll show them how to do that. If, you know, when this whole legal thing happens on the AI side, let's say Midjourney was to lose. Mm-hmm. And in the back of my mind, I'm like, didn't this whole FTX thing just happen where that shifted and everybody else that promoted it is getting screwed too?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it could create liability, you know, and I would tell a lot of people, like, you know, don't be a Luddite and, like, you know, whatever, like, ignore this. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I would probably say, yeah, have a little bit of caution, because let's say you're doing work for a client and, you know, there's some finding that it is infringing, right? That it you know, went beyond just copying the style and actually copied an artist. You might not even know, you know, mm-hmm. as the person using Midjourney, you might not know that Midjourney took, you know, like the figure from some comic book and just pasted it in. So that artist can say, no, look, like, it's exactly the same. Like, this character has the same tattoos or whatever, but that I created, that's clearly my work. Here it is, side by side. That would create liability for you as the designer, but also for the company that you work for. So, you know, I think if you're using Midjourney and using it for, like, commercial products, the idea would be, make sure you know the art and understand mm-hmm. the sources, which I don't know if we have, like, a really good way of doing that yet.
Yeah. No, I mean, maybe even just starting with a reverse Google image search would be a place to start, I guess. I hadn't really thought about it.
It would be cool, like, if there was, like, a commercial version of Midjourney or whatever that could kind of say, hey, here are the images. Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, again, I don't know if that's even possible in the model, but that might be, like, could flag, like, hey, these are from our training set. These are the images that you might care about.
Yeah, I know that brings up a lot, because, like, even with, like, chat, you know, using the OpenAI chat, the information that it's giving you, it gives it in such a way that's so confident that you're like, mm-hmm. oh, 100%. I believe whatever you've asked, and it pumped it out to you. You're like, oh, that's right. But you have to do your own research, and you find out that, you know, 50% of the stuff on there is, like, BS. You know, mm-hmm. you know, just plug in stuff in and it sounds real. So you're like, all right, but it's not quite there.
Not quite there. And what I've done, you know, is, especially, you know, for legal, since that's my kind of mm-hmm. domain of expertise, let's say, hey, like, write an article on, like, you know, trademark law for designers or something, whatever, mm-hmm. right? It'll do it. And sometimes it's pretty close, 80%, mm-hmm. let's say. There's definitely things where I'm like, no, that's not it, or not what I would do, you know? Because you also don't know the sources. Like, is it, you know, is that particular one pulling from, like, what lawyers have said or what people are saying on Reddit or whatever? Like, where is that information coming from, you know? And so what I'm doing is I'm experimenting with it, you know, and making content. I'm editing, obviously, you know, mm-hmm. I'm editing and applying my expertise. So I think the role of being a curator is going to become more, you know, if I can print, you know, if I can create 100 articles a week that are helpful versus one or two, that's going to be awesome. But, you know, I think that people, then it comes down to brand again, where people are going to be like, okay, that's coming from John Tobin or Council for Creators. We can trust that they kind of, you know, QA'd it. In essence.
Yeah, no, for sure. The one thing I would say is I was reading how Google is going to start suppressing AI generated content.
And yeah.
I guess it can tell on the back end from the way that the content's written. I couldn't tell you, but it's supposed to be going to start to suppress that stuff because of the volume, just the sheer volume.
Yeah. Well, I've heard that. And I was trying to figure out, like, you know, how they would do it. Like, you know, if that's what they're doing, like, is there a level of editing that you could do that would, you know, not trip off? It's kind of like writing, like, a newsletter to not, like, trip off spam sensors. Like, you can do that. Like, don't use a bunch of exclamation points. Don't use free in capital letters. Like, little things that are going to help you evade spam filters, you know? So,
No, that's nuts, man. So that's, you know, so if you're starting an agency, get a lawyer, right? Get legal counsel. Yeah.
It doesn't have to hurt, you know. I think that's the thing we always tell people. It's like, and it, traditionally it has. Like, honestly, like, I wouldn't have wanted to hire a lawyer, you know, 10 years ago.
It, just the idea of it is painful.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. You know, like, hiring a lawyer, like, reaching out, you're like, oh my God, one, is a person that I can afford, are they going to be good?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Two,
it varies.
Are they going to even understand what I do as a creative, right? Because,
right.
Yeah, you know, for the most part, it's like, you know, business law, you know, bankruptcy, like, not creatives.
Right. Right.
And there's so many nuances right. within creatives. So having somebody that was a creative, you know, is creative, is pumping out content, has these meetings that you can ask questions and be a part of a bigger group is something I think we definitely need. So I was super stoked to find you and see what you're putting out there.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a different model. I mean, you know, I think that with the growth of internet and social media, especially in the last decade or so, you know, as far as what I've witnessed, the role of lawyer could be completely different. You know, it used to be kind of big gatekeeper situation where literally there's things I say for free on LinkedIn or my blog that a decade ago, I would have charged $400 an hour to tell people. You know, but what that does is if I can bring people up to a level where they're like, okay, cool, I get all the basics. Now we can take you to the next level easily. Mm-hmm. You know, we can take you from like, okay, what's a trademark and what does it do? To like, okay, how can you make a trademark that now you can license to other companies and get passive income off of, you know, like you can get to the advanced level really quick.
With me, like on the packaging side, I design packaging, I design the structures. When I do that, I work with a factory in China. To do that, I also work with companies here in the US as well. But let's say with this particular factory in China, if it's like a new development, I'll have them patent it in China because there the patent process is really fast.
Yeah.
And it's subsidized by the government, of course. Sorry. So it's like super cheap, super fast. And then they can then patent it across the planet, you know, space by space, you know, country by country, pretty quickly. But how does that, you know, how does a patent hold up from different countries here in the US? Like, what's that process? I know I've got friends designing, you know, in New Zealand and Australia and different in countries, and they try to patent stuff there. But when it comes into the US, which is the biggest market, there's always issues. So what would you say to somebody that's looking to patent a structure?
A structure? Like a new,
So like a new way that a box opens and closes.
Okay, got you. Yeah, I mean, so here's the thing. I mean, and I'm not a patent lawyer. Like that actually gets. Sure. So I always say patent is like it's kind of like the brain surgery of law. Like that's all you do, and you know, I can opine on it, but you know what I would say is like there's patents that could be valid in China, but what the issue is you have in every country there's prior art, which basically means like if someone else invented it, like if I come up with a zipper,
right.
And I tried to patent that, patent office will say, hey, we already see the zipper. Here's the patent and, you know, whatever, like you can't do it. You can't patent this. So, you know, one country might give it, but then another country might not. So I would, you know, if you're looking to enforce a patent in a, in a given country, that's when you'd want to have a patent lawyer. So if I have a Chinese patent, what I would probably do is bring it to a patent lawyer here and say, hey, how is this going to hold up? Like, is this something I can enforce here? And they might say, yes, it's cool. Like, it's fine. Or they might say, no, you need to go through the patent process here as well. Regardless, I would definitely have a conversation with a patent lawyer and kind of get advice. It's also every situation is different. And that's where we kind of get into the zone of legal advice that, you know, I could talk to 8 different people with that same question and give 8 different answers, you know, if I was a patent attorney.
Okay. Going back to something you said at the beginning in terms of just identifying what legal advice is and what legal advice isn't. So what constitutes legal advice?
So legal advice, it usually comes from the application of the advice to a specific scenario. So if I talk to you about trademark and I say trademarks protect brands, that's legal information. That's just kind of general educational knowledge for you, right? But if I say, hey, for your podcast, you know, here are the potential risks for your brand, or here are the, you know, things to watch out for, or your brand is good to go. Like, I'm not seeing any problems in terms of like getting it registered. That's legal advice, because I'm talking about you specifically. Mm-hmm. Right. So if the question is essentially, what should I do? That's probably going to be legal advice.
Okay. And then,
Yeah. And then like the legal information is really cool because it supports that. So like I was mentioning earlier, in our membership, there's a lot of resources, because what I want people to do is kind of elevate their knowledge to a point so that I can actually give them legal advice. Because in the past, like I'd have to have a lot of conversations about, well, here's what a trademark is, you know, and here's how it works, right? I've had that conversation 1,000 times. And so I'm like, you know, at some point years ago, I was like, I'll just make a video that answers the question and send it to people, you know?
Yeah. No, that's crazy. And I think, so one thing that we're seeing a lot of today is designers, whether they're coming on board with an agency or they're coming on board with a brand, is a lot of like non-compete, you know.
Oh yeah.
I was locked into like the most horrible one ever, where the lawyers are like, you know, the lawyers I talked to afterwards, you know, of course, after I signed it, they're like, this is going to be impossible to hold up in court because it's so ridiculously tight. But they're like, you just have to consider this company has a lot more money than you do. And even though you may win, it may cost you, you know, tens of thousands, not hundreds of thousands to litigate. They're like, what do you want to do? So what would you say to somebody that's looking at some of these like non-competes?
Definitely have legal counsel, like when you're looking at your contracts. And again, that's why in our program, we offer that service because it's so important, right? You want to understand what you're signing. And then, you know, for non-compete specifically, you know, depending on the state, they're not enforceable. So if you give me a non-compete here in California, not only is it not enforceable, meaning the court just will flat out not honor it, the whole contract is void. So, you know, it's almost like if you do a non-compete in California, it's an own goal, you know, like you just kind of messed up your own life by doing it. Yeah. The entire, so if you're like, I have a contract that says you're going to, you know, do A, B, and C, court's going to look at that and say, well, not anymore, because there's a non-compete in there. And that's the punishment, is your contract goes away.
Wow. Yeah. No, that's awesome. And for $95, right, to be able to have some of these contracts and have somebody just, you know, give you, you know, redline it and go, hey, this is what to consider. I mean, the $95 is worth it regardless of what state you're in. Because you've got non-competes and you've got your NDAs. And some of those can be pretty ridiculous as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think people need to be aware of those and, you know, aware of how to navigate them. And, you know, there's solutions to it all, you know, and sometimes you even see them in contracts. The other party put it in there because they pulled a template off the internet and they don't actually really care, you know? And so I'll come back and be like, hey, like, let's remove that non-compete. Like, here's why, like reasons I just told you. Mm-hmm. And they'll be like, oh, okay. And that's also the thing you find out, like when you work with a lawyer, how much of a contract is actually malleable in your favor, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, that's great. So I think, again, if you're a student and you're looking for work in an agency and you're getting non-competes, you know, NDAs, any type of work contract, having somebody look at it is super critical, because you're going to lock yourself into something that's going to be, you know, whether it's unenforceable or not, it's just you're locking yourself into something that maybe you shouldn't. For $95, 100% worth it. Mm-hmm. Dude, I still can't believe it's $95. And this is not like a commercial for you guys. I just can't believe it's $95.
No, it's what we wanted to do, you know? Yeah.
No, which is what's so cool about it. That's just awesome, because it's never in the favor of the creatives. So like, this is definitely in favor of creatives. So we talked about packaging. We talked about AI and, you know, just setting up a business. As we start to wrap up here, what's like one thing that I think everybody should consider?
And this is something I would, you know, I think I even recently have talked to people about how one of the mistakes I made when I started out in business is trying to figure everything out myself, right?
Yeah.
There are, you know, in a lot of these fields, there's attorneys, there's accountants. And, you know, if you're in business, and I tell anyone, if this is your job or career, like it's an agency, you're a freelancer, you're in business, you're only going to be helped by understanding the rules. You know, it's a game, and like the legal stuff are the rules. So if you don't know them, you can kind of figure it out and whatever, but you're going to make a lot of mistakes that you don't need to, and it's going to slow you down. So I always tell people, you know, rely on expertise, you know, and again, I think one of my sort of missions is to make that more available, because traditionally lawyers have not been accessible. You know, it's not been something where you could, you know, start a freelance business and be like, I'm going to go hire a lawyer and spend $5,000. You know, that wasn't something people wanted to do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, and it's, I don't know, it's funny to me because like the only time you ever see a lawyer on TV is either in the car crash commercials or, you know, like a special victims unit, like, right.
Yeah.
So, you know, some movie, some show where you're in court and you're hammering it out. And, but that's not the case. Like,
no.
For like no. 90% of 99% no. of lawyers.
Well, I say, you know what it is? Like, I'll use the analogy of, think about like health generally, like health yeah. and healthcare generally. Surgery and brain surgery and open heart surgery are what's going to be on TV because that's dramatic. That's interesting, yeah. right? You're not going to see like, you know, stop smoking,
right.
you know, as like where that, but that's where most of the action is taking place. Like yeah. stop smoking. Here's how you, right. Here's how you exercise. Here is, you know, yeah. the kind of, you know, things you should be avoid doing, or here's physical therapy. That doesn't make for compelling TV. So you don't see that. So same thing with law and lawyers. Like you're only going to yeah. see the, you know, someone got murdered or, you know, there's a company trying to take over another company and, yeah. you know, we're going to fight over it. That's interesting. That makes for good TV. So that's an interesting point. Because I always do say that, you know, people's conception of lawyers is a little bit skewed by the media.
Yeah, no, for sure. Because the expectation is like, oh my God, you know, this guy's in a suit and, you know, he's going to, he's going to hammer me with all these questions, but no, I mean, it's just, it's accessible, which is what's really interesting, man. So I appreciate you hopping on here. Yeah. What's the best place for somebody to reach out to you and learn more?
Yeah. So if they want, they can go to Council for Creators. Mm-hmm. So Council for Creators, you can Google it. We have an Instagram, we have a TikTok, we do all the socials. So, in there we try to give a lot of good free kind of guidance to people so that, you know, if they're hearing stuff and are interested, they can kind of follow yeah. along and build their knowledge.
Excellent. And on your TikTok, what are you doing on your TikTok?
So really we're just, you know, kind of giving out quick tips to people, mm-hmm. you know, so my partner records a lot of them. You'll see him there. And, it's really just quick tips, you know, like, awesome. Hey, here are things to think about when creating an LLC or whatever. But, you know, our whole goal is just to kind of, you know, make all that more accessible, right? So not have it be so kind of behind this gatekeeper, but you know, hey, you can actually yeah. learn this on your own.
No, that's great. Yeah. I mean, Google's not the greatest place. Have you written a contract with Chat yet?
Not yet, but I mean, I might. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I was just throwing in contract requests in there and seeing what came back, and it all seemed pretty legit to a non-legal yeah. person. So I was like, wow, this is pretty nuts. Like, I wonder yeah. how this will support that industry.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, like if I can create more customized contracts that I can sort of vet for my clients, that's yeah. going to be really cool. One thing, and this is kind of what you see, like even with templates and other kind of downloadable mm-hmm. material, is if you don't understand what it is that you're signing or why things are there, yeah. like then it's actually going to be worse than not having a contract sometimes.